Oh, what have you done? I'm spoiled. I can't go. My hair, oh, my hair, wailed Meg, looking with despair at the uneven frizzle on her forehead. Just my luck. You shouldn't have asked me to do it. I always spoil everything. I'm so sorry, but the tongs were too hot, and so I've made a mess, groaned poor Joe, regarding the black pancakes with tears of regret. It isn't spoiled. Just frizzle it, and tie your ribbon so the ends come on your forehead a bit, and it would look like the last fashion. I've seen many girls do it so, said Amy consolingly. Serves me right for trying to be fine. I wish I'd let my hair alone, cried Meg petulantly. So do I. It was so smooth and pretty. But it will soon grow out again, said Beth, coming to kiss and comfort the shorn sheep. After various lesser mishaps, Meg was finished at last, and by the united exertions of the family, Joe's hair was got up and her dress on. They looked very well in their simple suits. Meg in silvery drab, with a blue velvet snood, lace frills, and the pearl pin. Joe in maroon, with a stiff, gentlemanly linen collar, and a white chrysanthemum or two for her only ornament. Each put on one nice light glove, and carried one soiled one, and all pronounced the effect quite easy and fine. Meg's high-heeled slippers were very tight and hurt her, though she would not own it, and Joe's 19 hairpins all seemed stuck straight into her head, which was not exactly comfortable, but dear me, let us be elegant or die. Have a good time, dearies, said Mrs. March, as the sisters went daintily down the walk. Don't eat much supper, and come away at 11 when I send Hannah for you. As the gate clashed behind them, a voice cried from a window. Girls, girls, have you both got nice pocket handkerchiefs? Yes, yes, spandy nice, and Meg has cologne on hers, cried Joe, adding with a laugh as they went on. I do believe Mommy would ask that if we were all running away from an earthquake. It is one of her aristocratic tastes, and quite proper, for a real lady is always known by neat boots, gloves, and handkerchief, replied Meg, who had a good many little aristocratic tastes of her own. Now don't forget to keep the bad breadth out of sight, Joe. Is my sash right, and does my hair look very bad? Said Meg, as she turned from the glass in Mrs. Gardner's dressing room after a prolonged prink. I know I shall forget. If you see me doing anything wrong, just remind me by a wink, will you? Returned Joe, giving her collar a twitch and her head a hasty brush. No, winking isn't ladylike. I'll lift my eyebrows if anything is wrong, and nod if you are all right. Now hold your shoulders straight and take short steps, and don't shake hands if you are introduced to anyone. It isn't the thing. How do you learn all the proper ways? I never can. Isn't that music gay? Down they went, feeling a trifle timid, for they seldom went to parties, and informal as this little gathering was, it was an event to them. Mrs. Gardner, a stately old lady, greeted them kindly and handed them over to the eldest of her six daughters. Meg knew Sally and was at her ease very soon. But Joe, who didn't care much for girls or girlish gossip, stood about, with her back carefully against the wall, and felt as much out of place as a colt in a flower garden. Half a dozen jovial lads were talking about skates in another part of the room, and she longed to go and join them, for skating was one of the joys of her life. She telegraphed her wish to Meg, but the eyebrows went up so alarmingly that she dared not stir. No one came to talk to her, and one by one the group near her dwindled away till she was left alone. She could not roam about and amuse herself, for the burned breadth would show, so she stared at people rather forlornly till the dancing began. Meg was asked at once, and the tight slippers tripped about so briskly that none would have guessed the pain their wearer suffered smilingly. Joe saw a big red-headed youth approaching her corner, and fearing he meant to engage her, she slipped into a curtained recess, intending to peep and enjoy herself in peace. Unfortunately, another bashful person had chosen the same refuge, for as the curtain fell behind her, she found herself face to face with the Lawrence boy. "Dear me, I didn't know anyone was here," stammered Joe, preparing to back out as speedily as she had bounced in. But the boy laughed and said pleasantly, though he looked a little startled, Don't mind me. Stay if you like. Shan't I disturb you? Not a bit. I only came here because I don't know many people, and felt rather strange at first, you know. So did I. Don't go away, please, unless you'd rather. The boy sat down again and looked at his pumps, till Joe said, trying to be polite and easy, I think I've had the pleasure of seeing you before. You live near us, don't you? Next door. And he looked up and laughed outright, for Joe's prim manner was rather funny when he remembered how they had chatted about cricket when he brought the cat home. That put Joe at her ease, and she laughed too, as she said in her heartiest way, We did have such a good time over your nice Christmas present. Grandpa sent it. But you put it into his head, didn't you, now? How is your cat, Miss March? Asked the boy, trying to look sober while his black eyes shone with fun. Nicely, thank you, Mr. Lawrence. But I am not Miss March, I'm only Joe, returned the young lady. I'm not Mr. Lawrence, I'm only Laurie. Laurie Lawrence? What an odd name. My first name is Theodore, but I don't like it, for the fellows call me Dora, so I made them say Laurie instead. I hate my name, too. So sentimental. I wish everyone would say Joe instead of Josephine. How did you make the boys stop calling you Dora? I thrashed them. I can't thrash Aunt March, so I suppose I shall have to bear it. And Joe resigned herself with a sigh. Don't you like to dance, Miss Joe? Asked Laurie, looking as if he thought the name suited her. I like it well enough if there's plenty of room, and everyone is lively. In a place like this I'm sure to upset something, tread on people's toes, or do something dreadful, so I keep out of mischief and let Meg sail about. Don't you dance? Sometimes. You see, I've been abroad a good many years, and haven't been into company enough yet to know how you do things here. Abroad! Cried Joe. Oh, tell me about it. I love dearly to hear people describe their travels. Laurie didn't seem to know where to begin, but Joe's eager questions soon set him going, and he told her how he had been at school in Vevey, where the boys never wore hats and had a fleet of boats on the lake, and for holiday fun went on walking trips about Switzerland with their teachers. Don't I wish I'd been there, cried Joe. Did you go to Paris? We spent last winter there. Can you talk French? We were not allowed to speak anything else at Vevey. Do say some. I can read it, but can't pronounce. Quel nom a cette jeune demoiselle en les pantoufles jolies? Said Laurie, good-naturedly. How nicely you do it. Let me see. You said, Who is the young lady in the pretty slippers, didn't you?
Oui, mademoiselle.
It's my sister Margaret, and you knew it was. Do you think she's pretty? Yes, she makes me think of the German girls. She looks so fresh and quiet, and dances like a lady. Joe quite glowed with pleasure at this boyish praise of her sister, and stored it up to repeat to Meg. Both peeped and criticized and chatted, till they felt like old acquaintances. Laurie's bashfulness soon wore off, for Joe's gentlemanly demeanor amused and set him at his ease. And Joe was her merry self again, because her dress was forgotten and nobody lifted their eyebrows at her. She liked the Lawrence boy better than ever, and took several good looks at him, so that she might describe him to the girls, for they had no brothers, very few male cousins, and boys were almost unknown creatures to them. Curly black hair, brown skin, big black eyes, handsome nose, fine teeth, small hands and feet, taller than I am, very polite for a boy, and altogether jolly. Wonder how old he is. It was on the tip of Joe's tongue to ask, but she checked herself in time, and with unusual tact, tried to find out in a roundabout way. I suppose you are going to college soon. I see you pegging away at your books. No, I mean studying hard. And Joe blushed at the dreadful pegging which had escaped her. Laurie smiled but didn't seem shocked, and answered with a shrug. Not for a year or two. I won't go before 17, anyway.
"'Aren't you but 15?' asked Joe, looking at the tall lad, whom she had imagined 17 already.
16, next month.
How I wish I was going to college.
You don't look as if you liked it. I hate it. Nothing but grinding or skylarking. And I don't like the way the fellows do, either, in this country.
What do you like?
To live in Italy?' And to enjoy myself in my own way.
Joe wanted very much to ask what his own way was, but his black brows looked rather threatening as he knit them, so she changed the subject by saying, as her foot kept time, "That's a